listeners. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I hope that you are comfortable wherever you are in the world and hungry for another radio program. We are going to talk about surveillance today, specifically CCTV. This is closed circuit television. The issue of privacy in connection to CCTV and how governments, big business, and other authorities are using this intrusive technology against its people. We have Charles Ferrier with us today from No CCTV. This is the campaign against camera surveillance. We're going to discuss all of this and go greater into detail about what they do and so forth. Their website is simply no-cctv.org.uk. I suggest you head on over there, read up more about what they do, and also, of course, follow along in their news section. They have they're keeping an eye pretty much on all things related to CCTV and surveillance. So with that, welcome to the program, Charles. Good to have you with us today.
Good to be here.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to talking more about what you guys do over there. So why don't you tell us a little bit about No CCTV, your website, and the campaign against CCTV.
Okay, well, in about 2007, what happened was there was a campaign to expand some cameras near where myself and my girlfriend were living. And we just sort of waited for somebody to come and stop it. We were against it, and we were campaigning other issues, civil liberties issues and stuff. But we thought someone would step up and stop it. And as time went on, we realized no one was going to step forward and actually fight this thing. So we stepped in, started to campaign against it. And what we couldn't believe is when we actually started to research what was going on, we couldn't believe what a lie had been sold to the British public. So we decided that we would expand our campaign, not just make it on this one issue, but look across the whole sphere of CCTV and start trying to educate people in the UK and encourage other people all around the world to actually campaign themselves against cameras and actually fight these things, so to give them the knowledge to do that. So our website has become an information resource, hopefully, so that people can go in there and find that information and use that to campaign.
So tell us a little bit about overall why basically you're against CCTV. What's the main problem as you see it today with the surveillance system?
Well, we break it down into three parts. First of all, the key one is the civil liberties argument that it's a breach of privacy, and particularly in the UK, which is a common law country, it's a breach of our common law rights. But then we add to that the fact that it doesn't work, it's ineffective. But we have to be careful with that one because there are implications, because as they move it forward and improve it, well, in their eyes improve it, in ours not improve it, there's a chance that it could start being allegedly more effective, but that will result in more miscarriages of justice and loss of freedoms. That feeds back into the civil liberties argument again. And the third reason we're against it is just the simple cost of it. It's a hugely expensive thing and a waste of money. But again, that feeds back into the first argument about civil liberties again, because as the cost comes down, it becomes a bigger problem because then it will just expand more. So our key issue is the principled argument of a civil liberties and privacy argument. But we bring those other two arguments in as well, which at the moment we're lucky enough that it doesn't work, and that's actually been an advantage to us. It is expensive and it doesn't work. So that kind of has helped us at this stage, but it's longer term, there are obviously concerns about those other two things drifting out, and it will just become a principled argument at that point.
You mentioned that it goes against or common law, that it's a problem there. Tell us about that. What is the legal issues here?
Well, the idea is that in a common law country, you're free to do anything unless it's specifically legislated against or specifically unlawful, to be more correct. So the idea that then has certain principles that go along hand in hand with that. They are innocent until proven guilty. And the idea of equity and fairness within the legal system. Now, the idea of being free to do anything unless it's specifically legislated against, you're obviously free to do that from the state. It's obviously the state is the person you're free from. And when the state monitors you 24 hours a day, follows you, tracks your movements, they're removing anonymity. Anonymity is implicit in that idea that you're free to do anything. It's not explicit, but if you listen to what that says, you're free to do anything, provided it's not legislated against. And obviously that means to be in a free country, you have to have some degree of anonymity. CCTV is massively eroding that anonymity to lesser and greater degrees. But as we move forward, it's going to be to a much, much greater degree.
So is this an issue of legal interpretation then of the law? Because it seems to me then that if it's against the law, then they're doing something illegal. And is that something that you and your group are going after, so to speak, in terms of the legal issues?
Well, the problem with the common law is that they are principles, and they have to be tested in the courts. You have to build up cases. You need case law. So what should be happening is that there should be cases to protect us from this surveillance, and the courts should be just building up a series of cases showing what's right and wrong. But instead, what's happened is that the common law has been eroded and it hasn't been followed. Barristers are not representing the people and pushing this stuff forward. And instead, the government are over-legislating and trying to destroy common law. Now, to actually contest it is a very difficult thing. The sort of case law that is being built on these kind of areas is actually only by very rich people. So celebrities like Catherine Zeta-Jones, who had a wedding party and she didn't want people filming her at her wedding party, things like that. And these people have the money to actually build some case law. Your average person in the street just can't afford the legal costs. So at this stage, we don't have a case that we can take forward. We would love to, but the sheer cost of it is a problem.
But people could potentially then go together, right? Invest in, I guess, in this case, in a lawyer. Is that how it would work? And you present this as a case to the common law system?
If you've got an actual case to contest, it is possible, yes, to then actually take that to court and actually test it through the court system. That would be possible, and it would be something that we would love to do in the future. Absolutely. If there were enough people who could get together to fund something like that, then it would be something that we absolutely would do.
And do you know how much we're talking about in terms of money to get the thing this rolling?
Court costs, it's difficult to know. I mean, it's hard to say. I imagine it'd be thousands of pounds is what we'd be talking about. I mean, you could. There's the other thing we can do is judicially review decisions, which is potentially not quite as expensive, but still would be expensive. I would imagine across the board, it's probably thousands of pounds that you're talking about to run these cases.
Hmm. And would that be? Do you know if that would be a country-wide, a UK-wide, that it would be tested, or it would be concerned in the whole of UK, or would it be more locally regionalized, so to speak?
If it were done in the UK, it would be a UK-wide thing. But then there's also the potential to take it all the way through and actually go at the European level as well. I mean, there was a case earlier this year where a campaigner in the UK went to the European Court of Human Rights about being photographed by the police. And he won that case. And that's a European precedent now about surveillance of peaceful protesters, although it's being ignored as far as I can see. But there is some case law being built at the European level as well. So it could be either. It could be UK or European level.
Hmm. That's an interesting point as well then, because what could happen there is that you'd potentially bypass the UK system and go straight to the EU court or something like that. In the UK, I mean, that's one of the worst countries, so to speak, in terms of CCTV. And it is being built out in other countries as well. And I suspect that we will see a similar scenario in the entire EU eventually. What do you know about that, Charles?
Yeah, I mean, there are documents moving around in the EU that are talking about CCTV as a tool in terrorism. And this is the argument that's being pushed through, that it somehow will be some magical tool to track terrorist incidents. So it is quite likely that there is going to be some policy coming through now that the Lisbon Treaty's gone through. There is now common policies emerging on crime and security, and so some of this stuff is likely to come through. There's already been some framework agreements a few years ago that were floating this stuff around, and it's only a matter of time before they try and push this stuff forward. The problem with the terrorism argument is that they love to say, you know, it helps with terrorism and they have evidence, but they can't show us the evidence to prove it works because of national security. So it's a very difficult one to fight because they just hide the evidence.
Is this part of the lie that you mentioned before, that this is it's under this terrorism guise that they managed to push through and introduce the CCTV systems, not only to the British society then?
Well, I think in the UK it hasn't been sold as a terrorist tool. I think that is the way they're going to try and push it at the EU level. In the UK, it has been just sold as a crime prevention tool. which it absolutely is not. There's no evidence to suggest that it is a crime prevention tool. You know, that every study that's come out has shown that it simply is not a preventative measure. If it did have any preventative value, it would only be for a short amount of time. People get used to the cameras. People know how to get away from the cameras. Cameras are not a magical being. They have limitations, and these limitations can be worked around. So that's the way they've been sold here as a false. The lie in the UK is that they're to do with crime prevention. That now has been shot out of the water. In the UK, they've now switched the line to they're now about post-crime investigation. But this also doesn't stack up. There's less evidence on that one. But in 2007, the London Assembly looked at some figures across the 32 London boroughs and looked at the number of cameras in those areas and compared it to the crime clear-up rates, and found that an area with more cameras doesn't have a better crime clear-up rate, which doesn't make sense. Their argument was that it helps with post-crime detection, then the more cameras, the more crimes should be solved. But in fact, it was a fairly constant level of crime clear-up across London, somewhere in the 20 to 25%, regardless of the number of cameras. And in fact, we plotted them on a graph, and there's no correlation between number of cameras and success for crime clear-up. So a lot of these arguments are being knocked down, but there's less research on that crime clear-up stuff. And so that's the argument they're using now, because what they love to say is, oh, we need more research, which, of course, is always the line. When the research doesn't give them the right answer, they always say, we need more research. If the research said it did work, there wouldn't be a call for more research.
Hmm. So, I mean, I've heard, for instance, that crime simply moved to other areas, and one of the obvious downsides of that system then is that that means that they have to have either you have to have the whole society surveillance, so to speak, in order for this to work. Otherwise, it would just move to other areas. Comments on that, Charles?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people anecdotally hear a lot of people saying that they think it causes displacement, crime to move to other areas. The research actually says that there isn't that much evidence of that, but you certainly hear people in communities who say that they think that their road suffers, side roads suffer when they put cameras on a big main road. And the idea of displacement is, if it is true, then of course there is this ridiculous argument that if you continue to camera up, where will you displace the crime to? And the argument is if you put cameras all over the UK, you displace the crime into the channel, which obviously isn't going to work. So, you know, it's a silly argument to say that you can just keep cameraing up to solve these problems. It doesn't work, and you shouldn't keep cameraing up. You should take the cameras down and actually spend the money on something that could actually help with crime.
I mean, I think that some of the material that you mentioned here already is part of an article that The Guardian posted back in, well, this is actually back in May 2008, but they basically said the CCTV boom has failed to slash crime, just as you said. And this is according to the police themselves, and they seem to kind of admit that it doesn't work. Have you heard about that?
Absolutely. The police are now constantly admitting it doesn't work, but we have to be careful about when they do this and how they do it, because a lot of the it doesn't work stories that are coming out from the police are actually to help push forward the CCTV agenda. The UK now has a national CCTV strategy that was devised in October of 2007. And what that lays out is for continued expansion of CCTV and making it more acceptable to the public. And that's really pushing forward. And a lot of that is them coming forward and saying, look, oh, it doesn't really work that well. And their argument is, it doesn't work, so let's put more in of a higher quality, of more advanced technology with databases and pattern matching and all sorts of things. But of course, when that doesn't work, they'll tell us they have to move up again another level, and this will just repeat this cycle. So we have to be very guarded with when the police come out and look like they're giving us support, but they're not.
Yes.
So for instance, the classic one that comes out at the moment is the one where there was a report from Scotland Yard that said one crime solved per 1,000 cameras. A completely ridiculous comment on the basis, it could be knocked down straight away. It doesn't make any sense. What they did there was they confused two sets of cameras. There are privately owned cameras and cameras run by the police or local authorities, local councils. And they confused those two groups of figures because there aren't one, because what they did in London, they said there was 1 million cameras. And then they took the number of crimes that had been solved divided by a million cameras to say only one crime solved per 1,000 cameras. Oh. But of course, if you have a camera in a little shop, a corner shop somewhere, that's not going to solve a murder across the other side of London. So it was a bad argument, but it was used to say, look, we need to spend more money on CCTV and improve this system. It wasn't used to say, let's take the cameras down.
I see that they're using the statistics to get a positive turnout for them, a positive spin on this. I see how that's being done. But some of the things then that they mentioned is that we need a national CCTV database. What does that mean, Charles?
Well, there's various databases that are being put forward. One is what they're desperately trying to do now is try and claim that CCTV is a forensic science. Of course, it's not. It can't be a science. It's about perception. It's about, it's like an eyewitness. Now, an eyewitness isn't a science. A science is something that stands still and you can study and take to pieces. But CCTV images are not a science. So what they're trying to do is make it into a science. And to do that, they want to start storing images in databases and distributing them around the place. So one of the databases, there are multiple databases they're talking about. One is just a database of where all of the camera locations are. And that's an important one because they want to register all the camera schemes in the country and then start looking at networking them all into one central point or back to the police stations so that the private cameras become part of the police-controlled systems as well, which would massively increase the surveillance systems that there currently are. So that would cause a huge increase. Then there are databases of the images that they capture so that they could distribute mugshots of people. And then there are databases of actually moving images, I suspect, that they'll be looking at further down because they're looking at pattern matching, facial recognition, and all sorts of automated systems. Part of the thing at the moment, you have to pay someone to sit in front of a screen watching these cameras.
Yes.
But they want to automate these systems and let computers run this stuff. Now, to get all this stuff through, they've got to pretend it's a forensic science, and they're going to try and lump it in with DNA. And obviously, DNA is a very controversial thing in the UK with retention of DNA. They're now proposing between 6 and 12 years of people not convicted of a crime, they could have their DNA held. In the UK, CCTV images are currently only held for about 30 days. But as they try and move it towards calling it forensic science, we're likely to see them saying that they need to keep these images much longer and possibly even along the same lines as the 6 and 12 year business.
You mentioned there again then that someone has to be basically watching what is happening, and I want to ask you a little bit about that. I mean, who is using the data from the CCTV? Is it police? Is it being shared maybe with other agencies, maybe even across the world? What do you know about that?
Well, there certainly is some sharing, yes. I mean, the UK government signed a deal to share CCTV images with the European Economic Area. So there definitely is some deals for surveillance sharing. The US have some access to CCTV images in the UK. So certainly we are looking at not just a networking of UK images, but a networking of around the world of these CCTV. And there are some projects in America, sort of the DARPA research projects, which talk about ways of getting CCTV from multiple sources and talking about getting CCTV from other countries as well. So it's a huge, the plans for the expansion of this stuff are frightening, really.
Do you think we're talking about a global system eventually?
I think there are people that are working towards that kind of an idea. And I can't see why on earth they could justify that, but I guess they're going to hide behind this terrorism argument and say that these networks work globally and they can. It's going to be something to do with that. But it certainly looks like there are people working on those ideas. Whether they'll get them through remains to be seen. And of course, that's down to how much opposition there is to this stuff.
What can you say about the 7/7 bombings in London then, when apparently the cameras were in position to film the events and things like that? And what I heard was that for some reason, they stopped functioning on that day or something like that. What do you know about that?
Well, the whole CCTV argument of those July bombings is very mysterious. I mean, some of the images, some of the cameras they claim weren't working. Some, they didn't release the images until much, much later. But I think what it shows, the key thing it shows is that the CCTV doesn't stop terrorism or incidents of that happening. So it doesn't have a value there. But secondly, actually, there's the point that never gets pulled out enough is that because of CCTV images, an innocent man was shot dead. the Brazilian that was shot on the London Underground that day was misidentified because of CCTV images and everything else. So CCTV actually killed an innocent man, not on the 7/7 one, but on the 21st of July, a couple of weeks later, as a result of all the 7/7 panic and everything. So it should be seen as a failure of the cameras and the fact that the cameras have no purpose. The only reason they were able to pick out anything from the cameras was to go backwards afterwards. So the success that they show us of CCTV, or they claim CCTV has, is through hours and hours of going through cameras backwards and searching in the past, which obviously isn't the value. And I also don't see the value in showing us people who are dead after the event. The whole thing doesn't make any sense at all. And yet they will claim all the time that that is a proof of it working. It doesn't make sense at all.
No. What do you think that this is evidence of? Are the police in that regard being lazy? They want to have cameras and technology do the work for them instead? I mean, I understand it from that point of view that they want to utilize certain sets of technologies in order to do their tasks, so to speak. But in my eyes, there's something else behind this, the reason for why they're pushing it in, and just as themselves seem to do them, present evidence that it doesn't work. Seems to suggest that they want to bring in more of it in order for it to work. Yeah. But what do you think is the reason for this? Why are they pushing this through?
Well, I think there's an element that, you know, governments like power. They like to control things. They will take whatever control they can take. And I think there is an... They are grabbing power and they are moving us towards a frightening state. And I think we are... You know, people say, are we in a police state? Are we moving to a police state? I think we are in a police state.
Yeah.
And I think we're moving towards totalitarianism. But we have to stop it. We have to pull it back and stop the march towards this. They obviously have another agenda, which is hard to get a handle on. You know, the stated aims of CCTV to reduce crime or detect crime are not working out. And the reports that the government and the police commission themselves say that. So the fact that they're continuing to do it, even though the reports they commission say it doesn't work, suggests there must be another agenda. It's very hard to get to the bottom of exactly what that is, but it's certainly dangerous and frightening, and it needs to be stopped. But it's getting people to be aware that just how dangerous this is and what the path that we are going down.
Absolutely. And what about if we talk about some of the, the average person on the street, so to speak, that might have the argument, again, which we hear all the time, I've got nothing to hide, so I've got nothing to worry about, I'm not a criminal, I'm not doing anything wrong. What do you think that people need to realize if they have an argument like that? What is the danger of a system like this? And if you track this down the road, if you follow this into the future, where do you see things are going to go with a system like this?
Yeah, well, people have lost sight of what privacy is. When they say nothing to hide, nothing to fear, what they're suggesting is that law-abiding, decent people don't need or deserve the right to privacy. But in fact, that's a complete reversal of what should be right. If you think about the privacy, surely law-abiding citizens deserve it the most. And what they're sort of saying in that statement is that only criminals need privacy. But that's wrong. Surely law-abiding citizens most deserve privacy. And to not understand what privacy is, the suggestion that privacy is hiding bad things from the police. But privacy is about living in a free country, just be able to move around freely and just not be interfered with by the state and not be spied upon. That's living in a free country. And people need to get a handle on that now, because the future of this stuff, at the moment, we're being watched and monitored semi-anonymously, if you like, because although we're being spied upon, it's not always easy to join up who we are all the time. But as facial recognition systems come in, we'll be trackable. And we already see this with number plate recognition cameras, whereby if you drive a car around in the UK, your number plate can be taken. That's stored in a database. They can match the car and therefore the person near enough to that car, so they can know your movements around the roads. And that's a very worrying state of affairs when the state is storing that information and able to know where you go and at what time all the time, and that's just wrong.
Do you think right now we're living in a climate which basically says that we're guilty until proven innocent, instead of the other way around?
Absolutely. I mean, CCTV and other systems, not just CCTV, other surveillance measures and other things we've got are absolutely saying, we'll check you later to see if you're guilty. And we've absolutely lost the idea of innocent till proven guilty and the idea of trust, which is essential for a healthy democracy. You've got to have trust in your citizens. If you don't have trust, which is what we're saying here, nobody is worthy of trust. We'll, you know, go about your daily business, but we'll check you later and see if you've done something wrong. You know, it's an awful situation, and it's not going to end well.
So what do you think about other, if we talk about how technologies or systems might be able to blend and share data down the road here, we can look at it from a point of view of the potential, fun applications they might give us later down the road in terms of you can track where your Facebook buddies are through the CCTV system or something like that. It becomes a totally different interaction, so to speak, with a system like this. I don't know if that ever will happen, but to me it seems that they need to bring in to kind of desensitize people to this and to acclimatize them to a surveillanced society. These are the kinds of things that will lure us in. What do you think about things like that, Charles?
Well, absolutely. They are constantly trying to co-opt people into the surveillance of our society and make them become surveyors. I mean, themselves, there's this whole expansion of home CCTV now where people can put cameras in their house and have them activated over the internet, and you can sit in your office or sit on your iPhone and pull up an image of your living room where your cat jumps in front of a motion detector and triggers off your system and causes an alarm or something. You know, so they are constantly trying to co-opt people into this and make everybody be a watcher. And certainly those kind of applications you're talking about are potentially could happen where you start linking things up. I mean, there's a whole argument that one way to solve the surveillance state is to open up all the cameras and make everything be surveyed and be surveyed all the time. But then we would absolutely then destroy privacy. And it would be a very strange world to live in. And people would then start modifying their behavior, knowing they're always on camera, always performing. So I think that'll be an unhealthy way to go. But there are some campaigners who believe that that is one way to actually combat the surveillance state is to actually let everybody have access to all of the cameras all the time. But of course, I would never trust the state to say that they have given us access to all the cameras. And some of the things that you're already talking about, monitoring Facebook friends and things like that, those sort of things already, to a degree, already do exist in the fact that there are systems out there which can track friends and contacts. You know, they build connections between people and then monitor those people. And there is a system that was used in America when they were working on the Washington sniper. They used a system there, which is the law enforcement people there were able to sort of pull up systems where they say, well, here's this chap and here's the guy that lives next door to him and here's where he works and here's him on his way to work and here's the people he works with. And they make all these connections and build these maps and then start connecting multiple systems in. And it's frightening stuff. And they used it to try and work out who the Washington sniper was. And they got it wrong. but they were very impressed with their toy and thought that maybe this would be a good thing for the future. But, of course, when you make these connections, a computer system will make connections that just aren't there. That's the problem.
Do you think that this also is about training a more intelligent system? We could potentially even talk about an artificial intelligence eventually coming in and monitoring all the systems, because again you mentioned face recognition. There are different software and programs that are running in the background that are scanning the footage. They might even eventually see so-called biometric signatures depending on how people walk and down to very detailed levels of this. What can you say about that, Charles? Where do you see things potentially are going with that in the future?
Yeah, it absolutely is moving down the direction. There are projects that have got funding and being worked on now at the European Union level about behavioral recognition, whereby you'll program into a system what is acceptable behavior and flag up the people are not acceptable. To some degree, they're already being used already, I understand, on the London Underground, where they can detect who's going to jump on a line. CCTV camera looks for behaviors of people who are going to jump in front of a train. So these systems of supposedly intelligent systems, of course they're not really intelligent, they have to be programmed in, and a system is told what to look for and who to flag up as a potential problem. Very worrying trends, and some of the stuff to read, some of the projects they're working on, Project Samurai is one of them. It's frightening stuff. that they believe that this is the future of CCTV. And the national CCTV strategy in the UK actually spells out that they're looking for the panacea of CCTV, which is facial recognition, behavioral recognition, pattern matching, linked databases, whereby they would link things like travel card systems to CCTV cameras, so that when you go into the underground system, your card would be recorded as you swipe in. You'd be recorded, and then they would know who you are and follow you through the tube system using a computer system. So there's some horrible stuff coming along. And that's really, this is the sort of stuff that we're trying to say to people you need to be worried about, because in some ways, I mean, certainly in the UK, people have become complacent about what CCTV is. They're not even aware of it. They don't think about it. They think it's not doing them any harm. But where it's headed and stated aims of government are to move towards these systems is very worrying. Naomi Klein did a report for Rolling Stone magazine where she looked at the development of some of these trends over in China.
Yes, I remember this, yes.
Which is kind of a laboratory for this kind of stuff. There's this Golden Shield project in China. And a lot of American companies are going over to China to test these new technologies and try and work out the way of best developing these so-called intelligent systems. And she said that over in China, facial recognition is like the new dot-com bubble. People are desperate to get this stuff because they know that law enforcement the world over will pay good money for this stuff. And of course, it is worth a lot of money. There's a huge worldwide industry for this stuff. And these people who are touting this stuff, all they care about is the bottom line. They don't care about the freedoms or privacy of the people who they're surveying.
So who is pouring money into these systems? Because again, you know, this many of these innovative ideas and new technologies, they in many cases come from the private sector because they're being hired and get contracts by governments and so forth. In your view, does this mean that we, the taxpayers, are paying for these systems, or are we talking about private financiers here as well?
Well, it's a bit of both. I mean, on the whole, it is still state money. It's still tax pounds in the UK. It's either council tax for local or police or central government tax to fund some of these things. So an awful lot of it is at that level. But then there are some private companies in this sphere as well. And it's much clearer in America than elsewhere where these private companies are moving in. I mean, the thing I was mentioning earlier about the thing they use for the Washington sniper, I mean, that was a private company called Seisint, who work in a project which, believe it or not, they're actually called Matrix, which is, I mean, they sometimes it's frightening the names they'll give this stuff.
Yeah.
And they're working on this stuff and then selling that stuff, their services, back to law enforcement. But they'll also look for commercial uses of those things as well, to sell them to marketeers, for shops and things like that. So it's being developed in the public and the private sphere, really. It is both. But it's still on the whole, I would say, in the UK certainly, it's still on the whole, is state funding.
So, again, other extensions of this might be, you know, credit cards, for instance, as people walk through a city, a town, what have you. Again, in the future, potentially, we could talk about people having RFID chips, for instance, in their clothing or in something else they carry, maybe in their car keys or things like this. And this goes into the idea of what is known as ubiquitous computing, where you have also intelligent systems around you, depending on if you lean against a wall, for instance. The wall can recognize your biometric signature or the way you walk across the floor and things like this. A system that is kind of all-knowing, if you know what I mean. This could even, I've heard it referred to as in a restaurant setting, for instance, you can pour up a glass of water, and in the carafe, the water carafe, it recognizes that the water level is low and sends a signal into the kitchen, like table 9 needs refilling, things like this. What do you see as the extension of all of this, Charles, and what is the danger with a system like this?
Well, I mean, yeah, this stuff is frightening. I mean, there's a really good video that the American Civil Liberties Union have done, a flash movie on their website about ordering a pizza, and somebody dials up for a pizza, and they have to give their identity card number, and they and they pull them up on the system and say, oh, I see you've got a heart condition, so we're going to have to put a surcharge on your on your pizza, and you can only have this thing, and your delivery area, we can see your address is in this area, that's a high crime area, so the delivery is going to cost this much extra and everything. So I mean, this total surveillance is what we're headed towards if we don't stop it. And there is this madness. There are these people who just think because these things exist, we must move forward with them. I mean, we heard something like Google Street View, where in the UK, the Information Commissioner's Office, who should have been the watchdog that should have stopped Google Street View, came along and said, well, we can't uninvent Google Street View, so we have to let it go. You know, it's a wonderful piece of technology, and we should allow them to move forward. But this madness that we have to just keep every new invention has to be accepted into society, and we have to somehow live with it because that's progressive and that's the future. And we constantly hear people, you know, claiming, oh, it's 21st century living, you know, but the 21st century is just the day after the 20th century. It's a nonsense to believe that we have to move into some futuristic age of total surveillance just because we're living in the 21st century. And that's what's constantly being told, this futuristic nightmare, really. And we are just going to build a prison, really, in the end, because the idea was actually put forward by Jeremy Bentham, this idea of a panopticon, whereby you would build a prison as a circle and put the guard's tower in the middle, and all of the cells could be seen from the central point. And any prisoner could be watched at any time. But the prisoner would never know if they're being watched. It was constructed in such a way that you could be being watched, but you're not sure if you're being watched. And that idea is what we've moved towards, this idea that you will never know if you're actually being watched or not. And that's the control system, because if there's the potential for being watched, then you're controllable. It doesn't even matter that. I mean, and in fact, to some degree, that's how the system works. You just need a box on the wall saying it's a camera. You don't need the camera there to build that kind of a system of control on people. If people believe they're constantly watched, they're going to modify their behavior. And it's going to create a normalization. People become just like robots. They'll all behave in a particular way that's the acceptable way. And of course, all of this has been predicted. It's all been written out. George Orwell wrote 1984 about just this, about this total surveillance idea whereby people have these telescreens that were potentially watching them any time and could comment. And so people have to modify their behavior. Any dissent from the prevailing view is not allowed. You have to just all fall into line. So that would mean protests would go out the window, dissent would go out the window, and that would just shape people into mindless robots, potentially.
Is that what you touch upon there is like the key, so to speak, for me in all of this, in this discussion? And do you think that this is what people are lacking? They're lacking the vision, if you will, to be able to put all these pieces together and see the big picture here, see where things are going. Because in my view, this is what people should be worried about, especially if we consider that we get maybe a political system change in the future. Let's say it switches over to a more tyrannical system. This is happening in historical times, and it might happen again in the future, which means that a system will be in place where the tyranny of that system will be 100% endlessly more effective, so to speak, than it has been in the past. And that's the most worrying aspect to me right now as well. What do you think about that, Charles?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Everything that currently exists, when somebody says, you know, there's nothing to worry about, nothing to worry about, nothing to worry about, that all depends on benevolence of the state, benevolence of the powerful people at the top. And whilst they have got our best interests at heart, everything's okay. But what you have to consider is that it might be naive to believe that this government is benevolent.
Yeah.
But it's downright stupid to believe that every government from now till the end of time will always be good. And if you build systems in that will allow somebody who's not benevolent to exploit those systems, then you've got a problem. You've left the stable door open. You've made a big, big mistake. And that's what we're looking at now. We're putting in place these systems which can be used against us. And most people just believe that they won't be used against us. And it's a naive view. What also doesn't help is the way that we all campaign in little bubbles all the time. You know, there's a campaign against ID cards and a campaign against CCTV cameras and a campaign against this, a campaign that. And when we break these things into little pieces in that way, it doesn't help the general public to see the big picture. But then when we join them all up, we get called paranoid and that we're mad. So it's very difficult. And in a news agenda kind of world where everything has to be in sound bites, to get any of these thoughts across is very, very difficult. And you're just shot down by the media. So the media is massively controlling people and telling them all not to worry, everything's okay. And they're falling for it. They're falling for it, unfortunately.
And yet, just as you say, they do the reporting on these issues, but it's up to people just to connect these dots. And it's more and more simple as we go down this road, because it's being more and more clear all the time to me. And you know, one question as well here that I want to pose to you is in regards to some of the things that you've been following on your website as well, for instance, or writing about on your website, CCTV in Scotland, for instance. What has been happening there, Charles?
Yeah, well, there's this ridiculous idea that what they've done is they've done a study and looking at CCTV in Scotland, and then there's been a study looking at cameras in the UK. And what's actually emerged is that Scotland has only got a population of 5.1 million. But they've got a huge amount of cameras concentrated in certain areas. In fact, in some of the Outer Hebridean Islands, they've got the highest concentration of council or state-run cameras in the whole of the UK, which is a ridiculous thing they've done. They're constantly seeing this in sleepy villages or whatever. They whack a load of cameras in to spy on a tiny, tiny population. But on top of that, they've done a study into CCTV in Scotland. And when we looked at the study, they released three reports on the same day, on the 4th of December. One looked at a survey of the effectiveness of CCTV. One was a strategy report, and one was an overview of the situation as it currently is, looking at the number of cameras, things like that. Now, all of these were released on one day. And so the media cycle on that is that they have to comment on that day. Three reports. That takes some reading. So the media cycle is that they just do the press release of the Scottish Government, which is that some of the cameras in Scotland are quite old, and lo and behold, we need to upgrade them all and install more, which is the standard response for all these things. What we did was we unpicked some of these reports, which obviously takes us days. We can't respond on the 4th of December. We need to read through these things. And what we found is they did this survey of CCTV effectiveness, but they didn't include the most current and up-to-date study, which was a 2008 study by the Campbell Collaboration. They criticized a forerunner to it, a 2002 study, which they said was it's damning. These are the definitive studies that say this stuff doesn't work. And the reason they're definitive is because they take a collection of studies. So the one in 2002 took 20-something studies, put them all together, looked at it as a big picture, and said this stuff doesn't work, except in car parks. The 2008 study did the same thing, but this time it looked at 41 studies in four countries and came up with the same thing, said in town and city centers and public housing, CCTV does not have a significant effect on crime. Hmm. But the Scottish government, what they did was they ignored this report. They just brushed it under the table, just ignored it, so that they could push for this idea that more current research shows that the 2002 study, which said the same thing, isn't true. But, of course, the mainstream media, nobody in the mainstream media picked this up. Nobody spotted it. We couldn't get that story out on the 4th of December because we needed to read the reports, which, of course, the mainstream media won't do. So it makes it very difficult to fight against this stuff.
Hmm. That's incredible. And there's some other things going on as well here in terms of you know, developments of the systems and so forth. For instance, I think speakers now has been installed on some of the cameras. In some areas, we also have microphones on the cameras, which might result in voice identification. But these speakers on the cameras is basically also about the small little policing of people all the time. One example, of course, that has been used is if someone drops a piece of trash outside the bin or whatever, the camera or whoever's watching the camera can speak to you directly and say, "Hey, you there in the black shirt or whatever, pick up the piece of trash." What do you think about systems like these, Charles?
Yeah, well, what these systems are doing with the voice stuff is they're destroying communities, because what there is CCTV on the whole destroys communities and destroys trust. And what happens in a situation where you put these things in with speakers in is people no longer bother to self-police or to act as a community. So if somebody drops a piece of litter, maybe in the past somebody would say, "Hey, you dropped some litter," and that person might be embarrassed and pick it up, or they might say, "Get lost," but at least you're having a go. But now people will say, Oh, I don't need to tell him because there's that camera there and that camera is going to shout at him. So it actually encourages people to step back and not be involved in their community. So what we should do to deal with issues of, you know, and these are minor infringements, and what we should do to deal with minor infringements is encourage people to exist as a cohesive community who talk to each other. And this is part of the problem. It's the breakdown of these communities that we've got, that people are not communicating anymore. People don't talk to their neighbors. People don't get involved. And we've removed various soft policing members of the public that they used to be. So they used to be park keepers and bus conductors and station guards. And all of these people were the sort of people that weren't policemen. They couldn't arrest you, but they would say to you, pick up that piece of litter, or don't muck about, or stop pulling your sister's hair or something, you know, and that kind of thing. That was just soft policing. And now what we're doing is replacing that soft policing with this hard-edged CCTV camera shouting at people and on-the-spot fines and everything else. But it's actually not helping. It's a nonsense to think that stepping back out of a community and watching it through a TV screen is the way to improve a community. That's never going to work. And in fact, one of our sort of slogans is that better community reduces crime, technology does not. And it seems to be this ridiculous presumption that technology is going to save us all from everything when it just doesn't. And there was a good book written on this by Anna Minton, in fact, about fear and the development of this stuff, and looking at fear and trust and how CCTV both encourages fear and undermines trust and causes problems in communities.
Do you think that this is intentional in terms of how the communities are being broken up, or is it just a side effect, if you will, of a stupid system?
Well, it's hard to say for sure if it's intentional, but it's certainly helping them to push forward their agenda. So it's a convenient side effect, certainly, because as they continue to destroy communities, they then say that they need more hard-edged policing measures, so, you know, more cameras, more officers on the beat doing on-the-spot fines and everything else. You know, I mean, part of the, you know, what you constantly hear people saying is that, CCTV is expensive. Some people will say CCTV is expensive, but, you know, we could have policemen on the beat instead. But why don't they ever say we could have communities self-policing instead? Why is it always about hard-edged, you know, tough measures? And there's this obsession with being tough on crime, tough, 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 and forgetting that there are some soft approaches which are just as effective.
What is Project Javelin?
Project Javelin is a project which is being run by the Metropolitan Police in London. And this is the idea, I was talking earlier about the idea that there are state-run cameras and private-run cameras. And in London, they reckon there's about 1 million cameras, but the vast majority of those are privately owned cameras. So there's only something like 10 or 11,000 sort of council-run cameras. Then there'll be some Transport for London cameras, which do congestion charge zone or parking offences or box junction things. So that will add a few more. But there's still not that many that are actually state-run cameras. What Project Javelin does is it's this idea, and again, it's this idea they want to make CCTV a forensic science. So the idea is that we look at the private run camera systems, and we have special units that can go in and get the images from these systems, load them up into databases or onto systems, and then distribute them through the police force. Now, part of this is eventually going to lead to networking these cameras, private cameras, into police stations. So you're massively increasing the amount of surveillance. And you're also starting to say that we'll build databases of this stuff. So Project Javelin is about these kind of databases. So some sort of an incident happens. They go and seize the tapes from a private company or something. They put this on a system, on a network, and distribute it around police forces saying, have you seen these people? So the old-fashioned wanted posters, really. Mm-hmm. And then people in those police forces will say, oh, I recognize that bloke, or he looks like a bit this bloke, and they'll pick up the usual suspects or whatever. So it's a massive expansion of surveillance. It's a way of them trying to fight back because CCTV hasn't worked. And this is where this report on Project Javelin is where this idea of one crime solved per 1,000 cameras came out. That was from Project Javelin. And they believe that the solution to this thing is to pull in the private cameras and make sure we use those, which is a nonsense, really. If you talk to people who've got shops and businesses, and if they've got CCTV, they're often getting these things they think is going to solve all their problems. When you talk to them, what they say is that the police are not actually interested in their small problems, that it's too small for them. Somebody comes in their shop, steals a Mars bar. The police aren't interested in that. And CCTV's done no good. So when the police are saying they want to network these cameras in and take control of these, they're not really going to do it to help these poor people and the problems in those shops or businesses. They're actually going to be using it just to increase their surveillance grid and use it when they want. So if they've got something that they're following, some investigation where they want to be able to track the movements, you know, this kind of backward tracking where they can say, oh, where was this chap 4 days ago? Let's pull up all the systems and we can, you know, now we'll have a massive grid over the whole of London. We can see not just the street cameras that we had before. Now we can look in every news agents and shop and restaurant and business. So it's a frightening extension of CCTV. There's no evidence to suggest it's going to increase the success rate and no talk of the privacy impact of this stuff.
And in my view, real criminals, so to speak, the more advanced criminals, they know how to knock these systems out as well. They know how to get around them. They know how to sheath the system, basically. So again, it comes back to the idea that it's not about preventing the big crime, so to speak, but actually more surveillance the little guy, if you will.
Absolutely. I mean, when they've done studies talking to actual convicted criminals and talk to them about CCTV and what they think of it, they've done surveys and most of them say that they're not bothered by CCTV. They know ways around it. And one famous comment that one shoplifter made was that he's never seen a CCTV camera jump down and nick somebody. And that's the fact of it. I mean, there's only so much a CCTV camera can do. They're not as good as a real human being or real interactions. And, the classic one in a shop, you put cameras in a shop, say, oh, we'll film the shop and see if people are shoplifting. But then police have actually themselves said that, a better way of dealing with that kind of thing is if someone's in your shop and they're looking a bit suspicious, is to say to them, can I help you? Can I help you find what you're looking for? Mm. If they're a shoplifter, they'll be embarrassed and they'll leave. And if they're not, you're being nice to them. They're getting some personal attention. That's all very nice. So there are solutions which don't need this technology, which, problems can be solved at a much smaller level.
Absolutely. We have a few other points here as well in terms of, well, I guess we can talk about reality shows as well. Big Brother, things like this, has that been contributing to acclimatize people to this kind of environment as well?
Well, absolutely. The problem with things like Big Brother is, first of all, they acclimatize people to surveillance, but also they acclimatize people to watching hours and hours of rubbish on a television where nothing ever happens. And this has implications for things like there's a project coming along now called Internet Eyes, which is an idea where they want to put CCTV cameras in private businesses, so it's private cameras, network them in to a private company, which then displays these things over the internet, and then get private individuals to log onto the internet and watch these CCTV feeds to see if anything happens. And this is very like watching Big Brother. There'll be hours and hours of nothing happening in a shop. and allegedly, if you see something happening, you press a button, and that will alert the person in the shop to what's going on. No one seems to have seen the basic ridiculousness of this situation. For instance, I'll give you a ridiculous scenario. If somebody came into a corner shop with a baseball bat and started smashing the shop up, somebody could be watching this online, if this is an Internet Eyes shop, and press an alert button. When they press the alert button, a message will go through to the person who owns the shop. So they might get a text message which says, somebody is in your shop smashing it up with a baseball bat. Mm. Well, I think the person in that shop is probably going to know that that's happening because they're there. So the ridiculousness of the situation, nobody seems to have spotted the simple fact that how on earth can that be any help to tell people something is happening when they're there seeing it happen? Mm. So the Big Brother culture is making systems like that exist. There's a similar system in Texas where they've got Texan Border Patrol, where they put 17 cameras along one of the borders between Texas and Mexico at a cost of $2 million. And they've had millions of people worldwide sign up to this system. You can go to the website, put your email address in, and then pull up the border of the Mexico border, where you will see nothing happening for hours and hours on end. Now, in the first year of operation, they set the target for that system to say something like they wanted something like 1,200 arrests. In fact, they got 11 arrests. 11 arrests. $2 million. Complete waste of money. But they will argue, as a BBC program that we took part in recently did argue, that this is a massive success and that they looked at both the internet eyes and the Texan Border Patrol and claimed that this was a great new way of revolutionizing CCTV, when in fact it's a way of making money off. But I mean, the people who sold that system in America made $2 million. The one in the UK, they're charging businesses to have these cameras. But the fact that people would sit and watch hours of nothing must have something to do with the Big Brother systems, I think, the Big Brother program, getting people used to watching nothing on television in that kind of voyeuristic way.
Yeah.
Very strange.
And even those shows are scripted, as it were, because it's so boring. Just as you said, people don't, you know, nothing is happening except that they go in there and cause, you know, drama and things to happen anyway. But you know, there's some other things here as well. I want to ask about, and basically has to do with how you hide from cameras. If you don't want to be seen, if you want to avoid the system. Is that anything that you've been looking into at all, Charles, and for people that just, you know, don't want to be part of all this, you know?
Yeah, we have been looking at this stuff. I mean, there's a couple of things that could be done. One is the fact that we need better mapping of where CCTV is in the UK. And there is a website in the UK called CCTV Treasure Hunt, whereby you can go along with a mobile phone, take a picture of a camera, and send a text message to a number that they give you, and tell them where a camera is. And if more people start doing this, we can map all of the cameras in the UK to an independent website, not some government website where we have to do freedom of information, but we can just map the cameras. So then people will know where the cameras are, which is one step. But the second thing is, it was interesting, there was a demo in London, I think it was last year, where the police were having a march against pay or something. And the police in London all wore white peaked caps. And I think it's interesting that they did that. And it's almost like they were trying to say something to the British public, which is, if you want to avoid CCTV, wear a white peaked cap. So I think wearing a cap is a good way of avoiding the gaze of the camera. I mean, the ones that I really hate, personally, are the ones where you walk into a pub or a shop, and the first thing that greets you when you go in is a screen straight in front of you, showing that they've recorded your entrance into that shop, which is incredibly unwelcoming thing to do, which is basically saying, just in case you're a criminal, you're recorded. But secondly, it goes against everything that is meant to be in terms of data protection laws, which in terms of data protection meant to be that you have a choice, that you are informed that you're going to be on camera, and therefore you can make an informed decision. And too often we're not given that. There's not a sign outside the shop that says, if you take one more step, your face will be on a camera. And some of that stuff, some awareness stuff of that needs to be worked on. There's a really good thing that a group called Ambient TV did in London, where they taped off, they went to areas, they worked out where the cameras were gazing, and they put tape on the pavement. And then when people stepped or were about to step into an area, they said, don't go into that area, you'll be caught on camera, because that area is the area that camera's catching. And I think just getting people to be aware where cameras are capturing them, because often people don't realize, and people have become so used to it. So I think, you know, wearing hats and just thinking about it a bit could be, you know, a step in the right direction. But on the whole, you know, we're not saying that we should have to monitor our behavior for the CCTV. We'd rather the CCTV change its behavior.
Yes.
You know, we don't want to have to change where, I don't want to have to change where I go and what I do to avoid the cameras. I want the cameras to go or to be pointing in another direction, frankly, you know, ideally taken down. But that's obviously going to require massive public support, which we need to really get going.
Absolutely. And do you also recommend people, I mean, some days you're just not in the mood, but other days, you know, you might even tell the personnel in the store or the bar or wherever you are, where you see these kinds of things, when you see the camera aimed at you and you see yourself walking in through the screen, just go up to the manager or someone at the bar or the counter and tell them that you don't appreciate, you know, being spied upon. You know, it's very simple as well, because we need to create a counter response to that, which actually, because again, this is all goes back to the idea of lack of communication, as you mentioned before. If the community kind of slowly is breaking apart, then it's also the responsibility of those people who are aware of that to bring it back together again and start communicating again, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. If more people did speak out against this stuff, I mean, it is interesting, when you do speak out against stuff, you often get a bizarre look from a from a shopkeeper or somebody who, as if they've never ever heard this before. And we need to change that culture. We need to get to the point absolutely where shopkeepers have been bombarded by people saying, you know, I don't take kindly to being spied upon. Because if that happened, then we'd start to see cameras coming down, because that, you know, that eventually people would realize it's not good for business if you put these cameras up spying on all your customers. Although there is the danger, of course, the next thing is that they can start hiding the cameras because camera technology is getting smaller and smaller. In China, they've hidden them in lampposts and things like that, where you don't know that you're on CCTV. Mm. So there's a worrying trend with miniaturization and everything that has to be watched for as well.
Is there any technology that you know that can actually not track the cameras, but actually pick up on if there is a camera in the vicinity where you're at? I mean, I would reckon that's a very advanced technology, but have you heard of that?
There are sort of bug sweeping things you can get for surveillance things. There are stuff about, I've never really tested them properly. And I know if the cameras are transmitting wirelessly, a lot of these cameras are wireless cameras now, it's possible to pick up wireless signals. But honing it down to know it's definitely a CCTV camera is something I'm not aware of, but it must be possible. It must be possible. And again, those are the sort of things that it would be great to get people involved, you know, in the campaign with the technological know-how to produce things like that. You know, I mean, if something like that could be produced, it would be very, very useful indeed.
Absolutely. And Charles, to begin to round things up here for this time, I want to ask you basically the overarching question after having an hour-long discussion about these issues. Basically, what people can do who agree with you. I mean, you in that sense are primarily UK based now, and this is the program goes out across the world. It's not a worldwide phenomenon yet, but I reckon it's going to be fairly soon. In a decade or so, we're probably going to see these cameras in on all continents in the majority of the countries. But what can people do then who agree with you and don't want to see the system expand any further?
Absolutely. Well, the important message that we've got is that this thing isn't, although when we talk about it as a big picture, it always sounds like some terribly frightening, huge thing. It all is being installed at a local level, and it absolutely is possible to fight this stuff, and it really is a winnable fight. It just requires numbers. So if people do care about this stuff, they have to get active. They must get active. You cannot sit around and wait for someone else to do it. I mean, that's what got us into this in the first place, was the idea that someone else would step in, but nobody else did. And when nobody else does, you've got to step up to the plate. Now, first of all, at the moment, it's pretty easy. It really is pretty easy to fight cameras in one sense. I mean, winning is harder, but fighting them is pretty easy. And that's because all the evidence says it doesn't work. So the first thing you've got to do is get informed and get some of these reports and get some of this data and then take it to the decision makers and say to them, how can you justify the cost that you are spending, this money you're investing into this system, when all of the evidence says this thing doesn't work? Mm. And that's what they need to be confronted with. You know, at the moment, they're getting away with it. What they're doing is they're saying, oh, we're doing something. This is what politicians all think they're doing. You know, local councils will say, you know, we're going to help the community. We're going to put cameras in. But that's because nobody's coming up to them saying, actually, that's a waste of money. That doesn't work. So the first step is to confront these people with the evidence. So you've got to pull together some of the evidence, put it into reports, present it to people. It means going to local council meetings, meeting with councillors, lobbying these people, actually saying to them, you know, justify that spending. Then publicizing this and trying to get the wider public around these cameras aware of these issues. I mean, what we've seen when we've campaigned is, you know, they'll run surveys of local people in an area, and the local people will say, yes, they want cameras. But they only say they want cameras because they're told that the cameras will work and that they do work.
Yeah.
But if you start talking to people and saying, are you aware of this research? You're aware of the fact it doesn't actually work? Then people will shift their position. So it's important that we educate the people. And again, it's easiest done at local level. If there's a local camera system about to go up, then you need to start leafleting and flyering, getting stuff out, talking to local media. The media is a problem, but we do need the media, but often letters pages of local papers and things like that could be the best place to start. Getting articles in local media can be difficult because newspapers have a vested interest in CCTV. CCTV supplies them images. It means they get to deal with the police and get sensational stories about robberies or whatever. So they love CCTV, and they will not have it that it doesn't work. We've had a lot of problems with media. They censor our stories, pull key paragraphs of reports we write, things like that. But nevertheless, we have to still use that as a channel, unfortunately, at the moment. And then it's working out where the decisions are made and actually challenging the people making those decisions. So you've got to kind of, again, you've got to go to meetings and council meetings and things like that and work out who's making the decision. But there's a lot that can be done to fight back. We are a central resource, so we can help people if people want to find out more. We can help them information. We can advise them on how to campaign. We can publicize things on our website. But this fight is absolutely winnable. We had a campaign in East Oxford in the UK, and they wanted to put 8 fixed cameras along one particular road in East Oxford. We campaigned. We got it down to 3 wireless cameras for a 2-year trial. Now, whilst that's not a complete victory because we didn't want any cameras, there weren't really that many of us. It was a surprisingly small campaign. Mm. If we'd had more numbers there, we would have. There's no doubt we could have got those cameras completely stopped. But we needed more bodies on the ground, and that's what it requires. It does require people to get active on this stuff. The surveillance state will not unpick itself. We have to do something. We have to fight back, and it really is winnable. It really is, particularly now. There's a golden opportunity right now. Now, this might change very, very soon, because what we're seeing is they want to change the measure of effectiveness. Right now, we're looking at crime figures, and it's showing it doesn't work. But the future is they're going to change that measure and start using other numbers to justify it, things like just the number of arrests, meaningless, really, because unless you actually prosecute the right person or arrest the right person, arrest doesn't matter. Number of activations of a camera, what does that even mean? But we're seeing that kind of a thing coming along. You know, if a court case comes along and someone pleads guilty, but they've got CCTV, they'll often say CCTV is involved in this case, even though it's nowhere, you know, it's not even used. So they're twisting the figures and manipulating it. So we need to take the golden opportunity of right now, the fact that right now this stuff doesn't work, and we have to seize on that.
So the best weapon, in one way, again, is information and knowledge about the issue, and then apply that in the right way, meaning to go and talk to the people who are in charge of putting these systems in place, basically, then.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the more people do it in a local area, the harder they're going to find it to say that, you know, they're not doing it, that they're doing it for the public good. The more people can just go along and say, look, here's the reports, here's the facts, and the civil liberties argument, which mustn't be forgotten, which to some degree does get pushed down the agenda a bit because we're in this wonderful opportunity of it not working. But and also just to ask them, you know, what are they trading people's freedoms for? You know, they're giving away our freedoms, and essentially they are giving away our security at the same time, because they're wasting money on a technology that doesn't work when they could be spending money on simpler things that could be effective. If there is a real crime area, street lighting is more effective than CCTV often. It costs a fraction of the money. Hmm.
Well, very good to get an update here from you, Charles, and we'd love to have you back again for an update later on. See how the work is progressing, see what you're doing, and see if other people get involved as well. But for now then, please give up your website again. And do you urge people to contact you from around other local areas in the UK or even other places in around Europe or worldwide? Or how does that work, Charles?
Absolutely. The website is www.no-cctv.org.uk. And absolutely, we'd love to hear from people wherever they are, anywhere in the world. We're trying to encourage people to campaign. We're working on various projects at the moment. We're working on we're going to have a frequently asked questions section up there soon with a lot of these standard issues on there. We're also hoping next year we're going to launch something called the National Anti-CCTV Strategy to fight back against the CCTV strategy in the UK. And we're going to spell out a more detailed thing about campaigning against this stuff and the dangers of where it's going. So we're working on those projects now.
Okay. Thank you for a great program, Charles. Keep up the important work. Again, the website is no-cctv.org.uk, and have a great 2010, Charles.
Okay, thank you, and you.
That's Charles Ferrier with a very important report about CCTV and surveillance. My thanks to Fredrik, Elizabeth, and Lana. We will be back with more radio soon, and heads up on our second episode of Red Ice TV from COP15 down in Copenhagen, as we take the temperature on the climate change conference and show you a little bit of the consensus at this event. Take good care. Thank you for following our work. We will talk more soon. Bye-bye.